The next case on the docket today is United States v. Haverty. Are the parties ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, we'll hear first from the appellant.
Chief Judge Erdman, members of the court, may it please the court, I'm Captain Cody Cheek, and along with my co-counsel, Captain Scott Martin, we represent the appellant, Sergeant Joseph Haverty. In this case, the military judge committed plain error when he failed to instruct the panel on the mens rea required for the specification of Charge 1. Plain error requires three things. First, error that is second, clear or obvious, and that third, results in material prejudice to an appellant's substantial rights. First, the error. For this offense, the military judge instructed the panel to consider whether Sergeant Haverty violated the existing version of Army Regulation 600-20 by wrongfully requiring Specialist BB to consume alcohol. This instruction remains erroneous for two key reasons. First, in light of Alanis and Gifford, the military judge erred by failing to instruct the panel that a mens rea of at least recklessness applied to whether Sergeant Haverty required the consumption of alcohol, which was the crucial element separating lawful from unlawful conduct.
There's something else here that I notice, that it's not just consume alcohol, it's consume excessive quantities of excessive amounts of alcohol, but that seems to have disappeared.
Your Honor, that language is contained within the first element. When the military judge, when he was explaining the regulation, he says, Army Regulation 600-20, paragraph 420 alpha, he provided the date, and it says, which prohibits requiring the consumption of excessive amounts of alcohol as an initiation rite of passage. So that language was encapsulated in the first element, Your Honor, but it did remain devoid from the third element, which
well,
we believe.
Was it found that he made her consume excessive amounts, or was it found simply that he made her consume alcohol?
Your Honor, the third element, which we believe is where criminality turned for this offense, did not require the excessive language. The specified issue for this case related to the instruction over the mens rea.
I know what specified issue is, but I'm asking you, what'd they find?
Your Honor, and the way the regulation is written and the way the instructions were promulgated, I do believe that's an open question, Your Honor. We know that they found that he required the consumption, we can
of some amount.
Yes, Your Honor. Absolutely, Your Honor. Yes.
What do we do with the charge sheet that just charged requiring her to consume alcohol?
Your Honor, again, that specification does not explicitly encapsulate the broader language of the regulation. Again, Your Honor, I really don't have anything further for this court, except that it was in the first element and how the judge told them what the regulation stated, and then he told them to weigh, based on the third element, whether he violated the regulation by requiring her to consume alcohol.
Doesn't the regulation refer to excessive amounts of food, comma, alcohol? And it's an open question about whether excessive amount modifies the alcohol?
Well, and Your Honor, that was something the government posited in their closing argument. The analogy they gave was that drugs, their insinuation was that it only made sense for it to apply to food, but that wasn't what the judge instructed. So I think to the extent the government argued that, it was inconsistent with the instructions the judge did provide. Our second reason as to why we think that the instructions were erroneous, first, again, Alanis and Gifford. But second, the instructions in this case remain clearly and readily distinguishable from this court's analysis in both Rapert and in Caldwell. Most notably, and unlike in Caldwell, the military judge's instructions for this offense did not mandate any consideration of Sergeant Haverty's mens rea.
Counsel, what should we do with the fact that the military judge did instruct in regard to it being wrongful?
Yes, Your Honor, and our position, I have two responses to that, Your Honor. And in looking at wrongful, obviously this court just recently addressed the similar term in Rapert. So first, Your Honor, we would say that in Rapert, and unlike in this case, the wrongful element contained clarifying language requiring the government to prove the accused mens rea. And the language of the opinion, it said that the additional language, quote, requires the government to also prove a subjective element, i.e., the accused mens rea. And then later this court went on to say in Rapert, the MCM's requirement the government prove an accused statement was wrongful because it was not made in jest or is idle banter, or for an innocent and legitimate purpose, prevents the criminalization of otherwise innocent conduct. And here, Your Honor, that type of clarifying contextual language is just not there. Instead, the panel for this offense was left with a single, undefined term that was not contained in the regulation itself.
Are we looking at plain error here?
Yes, Your Honor. We believe the standard review here is plain error. I know that in the oral argument in Caldwell, there was discussion as to whether or not it was waived and whether plain error was appropriate. I believe the answer provided in that case by the counsel is similarly applicable here. There was no colorable objection or no predicating case to support such an objection. It was pre-Alanis, it was pre-Gifford, and as came out in that oral argument, he didn't have a leg to stand on, or the defense counsel did not have a leg to stand on at the time of trial. So we do believe plain error is appropriate. Getting back to your question, Your Honor, about the term wrongful, I'd like to point out our second reason, is that Rapert, in analyzing the term, was a judge-alone trial, while this case involves panel instructions. So again, the panel received a single, undefined term that was not contained in the regulation itself. And unlike military judges, panel members are not presumed to both know and follow the law. Instead, panel members are presumed to follow the instructions given by the military judge. The Supreme Court in Sandstrom v. Montana told us that the effect of an instruction is determined by how a reasonable juror would interpret it, not an appellate court's interpretation. To that extent, our position is that no reasonable juror, based on that single term, apart from any additional language, would take that term to mandate consideration of Sergeant Haverty's mens rea for this offense.
But the military judge, on two other occasions in his instructions, did define wrongful or wrongfulness. And if you're an average juror and you hear the word wrongful and then you hear a definition, although not particularly to that charge, I mean, aren't you going to assume, well, that's the definition, that's what I'm looking for?
Not in these circumstances, Your Honor, and I think it's critical the order and the language of what was provided. This offense was the very first offense the judge instructed on. It was the specification of charge one. The language over wrongful and the specification of charge three and the specification of charge four, not only does that provide different definitions of what wrongful means, the judge didn't tell them that definition applied to any earlier offenses.
So when we look at instructions for their adequacy, don't we look at the instructions in their entirety?
Yes, Your Honor, and had there been a clause saying, or had the definitions been exactly the same for indecent viewing and larceny, so essentially for the first offense, wrongful remains undefined. For the second offense, where it's referenced, it's defined one way. For the next offense and where it's defined a different way.
Doesn't the judge instructed the members, that the reg prohibits, leaving aside the excessive, non-excessive question for the minute, prohibits requiring consumption of excessive amounts of alcohol as an initiation rite of passage. Isn't that the mens rea? We don't like hazing, so we're going to prohibit hazing in this form. If he intended to do this as an initiation rite of passage, isn't that it?
Your Honor, I don't think there's any predicating language in either the regulation or the instructions that would, again, impute that type of mens rea to that term. Our position is that that's just a matter for the fact finder to determine if it was in that context.
Okay, so doing something as a rite of passage doesn't impart any particular state of mind.
Your Honor,
other than the desire to do it as a rite of passage.
Your Honor, to the extent it does, the regulation is entirely silent. And that's why we believe Gifford is the proper framework. Here, You have a regulation promulgated.
Well, no, the regulation is silent, but that's not my question. My question is, what is the import of the language as an initiation rite of passage?
Your Honor.
You're saying it's merely a fact to be found by the trier of fact.
Your Honor, I think the better answer is it's unclear. And I'm not trying to abstain or dodge away from your question. It's just not clear. It's silent. Every aspect of this regulation is silent as to mens rea. And we have argued, you know, extensively in the briefs over the third element. But I do think it's worth noting, Your Honor, in response to your question, there's no indication at all over mens rea for any aspect of the regulation, or at least in paragraph 4-20 alpha.
Well, then it's strict liability.
And Your Honor, we think that's the real danger with how this regulation is written and how this regulation could be interpreted. And we think that's especially true in light of the fact that, unlike in Caldwell, the regulation in this case automatically prescribes five different categories of conduct as constituting hazing. And I think that's a critical point. In Caldwell, the framework in which this court analyzed the offense was you have knowledge that someone is your subordinate. You have knowledge of a predicating or of the act. And then that's weighed objectively under all the circumstances under the prescribed standard. Here, the language of the regulation appears, from our perspective, to short-circuit that type of analysis. If a fact finder finds that any one of those five categories are met, which is one of those was this offense, requiring the consumption of alcohol, that they to someone reading the regulation, they may believe it doesn't matter if it then meets the stated criteria in hazing, that it's an activity that is cruel, abusive, oppressive, or harmful.
Wait a minute. Now you're suggesting that making somebody else drink a tumbler of booze in and of itself violates the regulation.
Your Honor, we believe, or our position, Your Honor,
because
based on
this requires, I mean, I read this as requiring some sort of intent that it be done as an initiation rite of passage on the part of the initiator.
And Your Honor, our response would be that any such mens rea or any such intent was not instructed.
Well, I mean, you're within your rights to not call it a mens rea, but the reg certainly seems to require it.
And if it does, Your Honor, our position would be that would have not have been filtered down to the panel through the instructions provided by the military judge. And really, that is a key. We believe, or our position is that, as in Gifford, this is a Gifford is obviously an order. This is a regulation that was charged under Article 92 that remains silent as to mens rea. And we think this court in Gifford provided a clear framework for what's supposed to happen in that.
Under what circumstance, counsel, would it be lawful or proper behavior for someone to force or require the consumption of alcohol?
Your Honor, we provided a few circumstances in our reply brief in that all parties involved in the transaction, the person providing the alcohol would believe that they weren't doing that they were only offering it. The person receiving the alcohol could believe that it was only being offered, and they accept that offer. But the regulation states express or implied consent is not a defense. So you could have something where everyone involved in the transaction believes this is purely innocent conduct, but a third-party fact finder could say, well, it doesn't matter. This regulation doesn't tell us that it matters what you think. It doesn't matter what you think. We think that under these circumstances it was required, and this is criminalized under this regulation. I do have another hypothetical.
I'm just saying, if as an objective matter, a third party looking in believed that, regardless of what the young lady thought, they believed that she was being forced or required to consume alcohol. Like, why would that, under what circumstance would that be lawful or proper behavior?
And Your Honor, our position is not that in that exact circumstances, such a prescription of criminal conduct would always be innocent. Our position is that there are ways in which this regulation, based on the nature of its language as written and as instructed, could. Another example would be, Your Honor, this regulation does not account for jest. It doesn't count for someone who is joking and had no And that was what they were intending to do, was just inject.
I think forcing or requiring, I think if you would make a finding that someone is forced or required someone to do something, that by definition you decided that it wasn't a jest.
And Your Honor, our response would be that Gifford has said that such an analysis, a higher level of mens rea is required under these circumstances.
Thank you, Counsel. You'll have additional time on rebuttal. The court will now hear from the government.
Judge Erdman, judges of the court, may it please the court, my name is Captain John Gardella, and along with Major Cormick Smith, we represent the United States. This court should find that the military judge's instructions were not plain error for the same reasons it did so in U.S. v. Caldwell. First, the same unique military exigencies that existed in Caldwell exist here for an Article 92 offense that prohibits hazing. Second, general intent is sufficient to separate wrongful from innocent conduct. And third, the military judge's instructions sufficiently flagged the general intent requirement in this regulation.
Counsel, in your brief and now here you refer to general intent. What distinctions are you drawing between general intent and strict liability?
Your Honor, there is the government's position is not that this is in any way a strict liability offense. It's not that this is a public welfare offense. In strict liability, all we would look at is the appellant's actions. It wouldn't matter if he accidentally committed the offense or if he did so without intending his actions. In this case, we distinguish that by saying that appellant had to have intended his actions, had to have been aware of that he was requiring, in this case, Specialist BB to consume alcohol.
But why is that not giving away the store? If you're saying that, in fact, there is a mens rea requirement here, that's exactly what appellants are.
Correct. Yes, there is a mens rea requirement, Your Honor, and for the same reasons that this court found that there was a mens rea requirement in U.S. v. Caldwell. The mens rea requirement, the same as in Carter, that you were aware of your actions, and that is all that is necessary to separate wrongful from innocent conduct. If the panel then finds that your actions were objectively unreasonable or the language in the regulation that the later determined to be cruel, abusive, oppressive, or harmful.
Okay, I'll ask you the same question I asked them. Consume any alcohol or consume excessive amounts of alcohol?
Yes, Judge Tsuki. The regulation makes
what
it clear.
What was he convicted of? Is this a strict liability offense? You make somebody drink 3 drops of booze, that's it. The hammer falls. You just said it wasn't. But, I mean, what is it?
Well, to answer that, the second part of your question there, Your Honor, it's not a strict liability offense also because a panel has to determine whether or not objectively it's cruel, abusive, oppressive, or harmful to the victim. And additionally,
well, the instructions don't say anything about that. The instructions say consume excessive amounts of alcohol as an initiation rite of passage. The accused had the duty to obey the reg, and he violated the reg and wrongfully required to consume alcohol.
Correct.
Yeah. So, back to my question. Number one, what's the gravamen of the offense? Is it a strict liability offense consuming any alcohol? Is it as it seems to say, excessive amounts? What was he convicted of?
Well, the regulation makes it clear that the various examples given in the hazing portion of AR 600-20, it says hazing includes but is not limited to. So although the regulation specifically gives an example that excessive amounts of food, alcohol, drugs,
and the members were so instructed.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
So go on.
Well, but the military judge's instructions, as you also pointed out, Your Honor, in the first element referred to AR 600-20 and that this had to be done as an initiation rite of passage. And also in the third element, it referred to AR 600-20 and that the accused violated that regulation by wrongfully taking these actions. So the panel was aware of the need to refer to AR 600-20 to determine whether...
Provided a copy of the regulation? Was that marked as an exhibit?
The panel had a verbatim copy of this portion of the regulation. It was in Prosecution Exhibit 1 that was part of a counseling statement. Admittedly, not the best way for the panel to get that evidence. However, it definitely had the language, and it was aware also through the testimony of the, I believe it was the company commander who gave that counseling statement to the appellant, saying that it was, yes, this is a verbatim copy. I copied that directly out of what the regulation stated at the time.
Counsel, obviously the 2008 version of the regulation did not have a mens rea requirement, which is why we're here today, which could imply that it was a strict liability offense. But in the 2014 version was changed to include the term reckless, which seems to imply that maybe the 2008 version was a strict liability offense. Is that something that we should take into consideration or look at all?
Your Honor, the government's position on that is that it is not, it isn't something that is should be taken into consideration in interpreting what this current regulation requires. That regulation was written 6 years later. A new Secretary of the Army had taken over at that time.
But don't changes intend to make a change? They change something?
Potentially, yes, Your Honor, admittedly. And that regulation also has a reckless standard written into it. So it is not a specific intent requirement. And the government is firm on the position that this regulation was not a specific intent requirement. There was no specific intent necessary for the appellant in his mind to believe that he was committing an initiation rite of passage or that he was being cruel, abusive, oppressive, or harmful to the victim. And the government sees
now,
that.
Before you go on, can I ask you this? You've admitted that there is an intent component and a knowledge component, have you not? When you said awareness, did you mean the knowledge at that point, the mens rea, the state of mind of knowing? Or was that just a colloquialism you were using?
I should have said knowledge of his actions. I believe is what you're referring to.
That's
yes,
right.
So the appellant had to have knowledge of his actions, had to have known that he was requiring the victim in this case to consume alcohol, or had to have known any of the examples given this in AR 600-20, had to have known that he was committing those actions. Then, if the panel finds objectively that the appellant's conduct was cruel, abusive, oppressive, or harmful, then that is sufficient to separate wrongful from innocent conduct. And that is the important element here, the important principle here that we have from Alonis, that we have from Carter, that we have from Staples. All of those cases, the important principle was that what is necessary to ensure that the statute or the regulation in this case is not going to punish innocent conduct. And in this case, those requirements is all that is necessary. And the court should only infer a mens rea that is necessary to separate wrongful from innocent conduct. So although general intent is a different standard than the model penal code's recklessness, it's really an entirely different construct. But if recklessness requires more than general intent does, then this court should only infer the mens rea that is necessary to separate wrongful from innocent conduct. And in this case, it's general intent. As my colleague argued, Gifford in some way, the defense is trying to say that Gifford in some way requires a reckless standard for every single Article 92 violation. And the government's position is that is absolutely not what Gifford stands for. That Gifford stood for in that regulation or in that specific general order, what was necessary to separate wrongful from innocent conduct was recklessness. However, this could be a potentially different mens rea for each order and for each regulation punished under Article 92. Article 92 has been interpreted by this court in and of itself to be a general intent statute. So potentially a regulation or an order punished under Article 92 could elevate that mens rea to a specific intent requirement or to a reckless requirement.
Well, is that what happened here? I mean, what you have this language that requires two things. They were instructed. Consume booze. Makes her consume booze. As an initiation rite of passage. What is that? Is that a mens rea? Is that, it seems to say that if you simply make her drink, while that may be a violation of 92, depending on who you are and who she is, it's not hazing because it wasn't done with the intent of it being a rite of passage.
And that's where we disagree with that interpretation, Your Honor, because the regulation says hazing is fundamentally in opposition to our values and is prohibited. The intent.
Well, yeah, but that's just a precatory statement. But what did you tell the members? What does the reg say? You know, it's a punitive reg. Therefore, it's got to have punitive language. That's not punitive language.
Yes. Well, Your Honor, first the court must look to the regulation to determine what the mens rea is required in the regulation.
I ask you again, what is the import of that phrase, as an initiation rite of passage?
That is a question for the panel, Your Honor. It's a question for the panel to determine objectively, was this an initiation rite of passage, considering the circumstances that appellant required specialist
duty? That's not an element? That's not something that's required to be convicted of a violation of this portion of the regulation?
Yes, Your Honor. It's certainly an element.
But it's nothing more than a factual thing. It's not a question of law.
Yes, Your Honor. It is an element, and it is something that the panel had to find in order to find appellant guilty. However, it is not a mens rea requirement for appellant to have specifically intended to initiate to his actions as initiation.
Well, then what is necessary? I don't want to beat a horse till it dies three times, but what's necessary to convict somebody of hazing?
That the appellant was aware of his actions and that considering the circumstances.
What actions?
In this case, his
the
actions
booze?
Of requiring, yes.
Okay.
Specialist BB to consume alcohol.
Okay. Was aware he was making her drink booze.
Correct, Your Honor. It wasn't an accident. It wasn't something
right.
As a part of a rite of passage, though. Making
yes.
her drink the booze as a rite of passage or whatever that language is.
Well, but you just denied that, I think.
Well, this is not a mens rea requirement, though, that it be its initiation rite
of
passage.
But it's something that has to be found. It's something that would seem to distinguish this portion of the reg from another Article 90, 93 offense that may be cruelty or maltreatment, but has nothing to do with hazing.
Just making another individual who is junior to you
drink
does not amount to hazing unless it is done, or the way I read it, as part of a rite of passage.
That's the way I read it. Yeah, and that's why I'm asking.
And
what is the import of this language?
The import of this language is that the panel had to make those determinations that it was an initiation rite of passage, not that the appellant at the time had to have intended it that way. So the same way as in a maltreatment case,
so
that the appellant
the panel,
at the time.
It's an objective standard and has nothing to do with the intent of the accused.
Correct. And the same
so
as
if an accused doesn't intend it to be part of initiation, he's viewing this person as a peer, and he's saying, come on, drink. And he does, but the accused doesn't view that as being part of initiation. He views him as being a rambunctious, forceful buddy. You're saying that's fine. To convict
him. Oh, correct. Yes, that is fine to convict him, and that
so
is exactly
why
what
shouldn't that give us pause?
Well, Your Honor, that is exactly what the Army regulation was intending to do, was to prohibit all forms of hazing. And that is why the language further on is...
So you're getting back, though, to strict liability. If you simply engage in conduct that a panel, you knowingly engage in the conduct, but you don't have the mens rea for the intent behind it. If a panel says, hey, you fit within this regulation, therefore you're guilty. Why is that not strict liability?
For the same reasons that it was not strict liability in U.S. v. Caldwell, Your Honor.
But in Caldwell, we were saying that Article 93 is a very special regulation where it's a separate regulation imposed by Congress, and we've got the superior-subordinate relationship. It comes down to a question of abuse of authority. So what we've got is we've got these young service members who are constantly being told, you have to listen to your superiors. And importantly, if you don't, the full force of the law can come down on you. Why is there not a distinction between that and this general regulation?
Your Honor, and the reason why the importance of abuse of authority was so important to this court in U.S. v. Caldwell was because of the military context. The military has been recognized by the Supreme Court to constitute a specialized community governed by a separate discipline from that of civilian. Military exigencies, all of these circumstances unique to the military were considered in U.S. v. Caldwell. And they should identically
apply. You say unique to the military, here. But doesn't the reg refer to civilians as well, employees? So how is it unique to the military?
Well, it's necessary for the service secretaries and for senior commanders to make regulations that govern the conduct, the behavior of soldiers in relation to one another, the same as it is for them to govern, or the same as it is important for a superior subordinate relationship, especially when it comes to hazing in this circumstance.
So what import does the language in the definitional section for hazing that it says that basically it's defined as a service member unnecessarily causing another military member employee, quote, to suffer or be exposed to an activity that is cruel, abusive, oppressive, or harmful? What function does that language serve?
That language, Your Honor, is the objective analysis that the panel is to go through to determine whether or not it actually meets the definition of hazing. Whether the appellant exposed the victim to suffer or an activity that is cruel, abusive, oppressive, or harmful.
So they need to find that in addition to the fact that they made them drink?
Yes, Your Honor, correct. That is a question for the panel, whether that behavior was cruel, abusive, oppressive, or harmful. And that is additionally why this is a different analysis than strict liability. We're not just looking solely at the appellant's actions. However, appellant had to be aware of his actions. We're also looking at whether that objectively is cruel, abusive, oppressive, or harmful. It's not even a reasonable standard, a reasonable person standard. This is a much higher requirement. And the military judge's instructions not only identified this requirement in the references to AR 600-20, he also identified a higher requirement, a higher mens rea requirement by using the term wrongful. It is essential for the panel to find that the appellant was not innocently committing his actions if the military judge instructs them that he had to have wrongfully violated this regulation, that he had to have wrongfully required Specialist BB to consume alcohol.
I guess this goes back to Judge Olson's question, which is, you know, you, I thought, answered him when he said if someone just said drink, 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 and just meant it as a jest, that could be punishable under this regulation, but it sounds now like you're requiring more.
So to be clear, Your Honor, that could be punishable by the regulation. That is our position, that type of behavior could be punished by the regulation. That wrongful was not...
But only if the members fill in the blank. Found
cruel, abusive, oppressive, and harmful. Yes. They would have to find the circumstances in that case. And our position is not that wrongful was necessarily required by the military judge's instructions. However, by importing that language into one of the elements of the crime, the military judge actually required the panel to exceed the mens rea necessary. As this court has determined in Raper, that wrongful implies some sort of subjective intent, some sort of subjective malicious intent in the mind of the appellant. So by importing that language into the third element, the military judge actually instructed the panel to require a mens rea that exceeded what was required in the regulation.
Counsel, I'd like to give you an opportunity to respond to hypothetical that was in the reply brief of appellant, page 6 of the reply brief, where it says a defendant who believes they are offering alcohol could still be convicted if the fact finder concludes the recipient thought consumption was required. A defendant could even be convicted when both the provider and the recipient believed alcohol was offered if the fact finder concludes consumption was required. How do you react to that assertion in the reply brief?
Well, and if I recall correctly, those are examples, Your Honor, of what could be innocent conduct punishable under this.
Correct.
Well, and I see that I'm out of time.
You can respond to the question.
To separate wrongful from innocent conduct in those type of instances, the panel still has to find that under those circumstances, this was cruel, abusive, oppressive, or harmful behavior. Just as the regulation states that consent by either party is not a part of this offense, that's because the regulation is attempting to root out or prohibit all types of hazing, regardless of what is going on in the mind of the appellant or in the mind of the victim. And in that...
Because people voluntarily participate in hazing.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Right? I mean, sororities, fraternities, all the things that we read about in the news.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And regardless of whether it was voluntary or not, it still tears at the fabric of the Army, and it was still, that was the type of behavior that was attempting to be prohibited by this regulation.
You may briefly conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. This Court should find that Article 92 and the hazing prohibition in AR 600-20 only require general intent to separate wrongful from innocent conduct, and that the military judge's instructions sufficiently flagged this mens rea in the elements of the offense when he referenced AR 600-20 and stated that appellant must have wrongfully required Specialist BB to consume alcohol. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'd like to start by quoting something this Court wrote in Caldwell. There is little doubt that, as the Supreme Court has noted, few areas of criminal law pose more difficulty than the proper definition of the mens rea required for any particular crime. In Caldwell, during the oral argument, this Court asked, how do we give guidance to practitioners in the field? And obviously, to the extent, if any, that this Court does look to policy in this case, we would posit that this is exactly why we want commanders to be clear, or service secretary, or anything, an order or regulation, be clear as to mens rea. Expressly state what it is. Expressly state that it's a strict liability. Be clear. And my colleague stated that our position is that our argument would apply to all offenses under Article 92, and that's simply not our position. Our position is that Gifford has given a functional and effective framework to provide clarity, which is that if an order or regulation is silent as to mens rea, it doesn't say what it is, it doesn't say that it explicitly state that it does not apply, that recklessness should be read in to the material element separating lawful from unlawful conduct. Now, as a policy matter, what the service secretary did for this exact same type of offense is exactly what we want. The new version explicitly states that hazing is any conduct whereby a service member or members, regardless of rank, service, or position, without proper authority, recklessly or intentionally cause a service member to suffer or be exposed to any activity that is cruel, abusive, humiliating, oppressive, demeaning, or harmful. Silence over mens rea is very complicated in a post-Alanis and in the military context, a post-Gifford world. So to the extent, if at all, this court looks at policy, which it did ask about in the Caldwell argument, we believe there are strong policy indications to incentivize commanders and incentivize legal advisors to ensure that it's clear. Second, the government has stated, and the parties actually agree, that a mens rea applies in this case. They say it's a general intent mens rea. We see this in the Gifford framework. However, our position is no mens rea was instructed. The effect to the panel was that this was essentially a strict liability offense. And if the government believes it was a general intent mens rea, even if this court views this in the prism of Caldwell, it wasn't instructed that way. And this court, in the Caldwell analysis, still looked to the instructions. And the language from the opinion was that it sufficiently flagged the need for the panel to consider mens rea, or general intent mens rea. And the other quote was that the military judge repeatedly made clear. And the framework from Caldwell was that you had the act, and then it was overlaid against the standard. That didn't happen here, and we would firmly dispute that the instructions to the panel, if in fact the regulation did require it, the panel was not instructed that they then had to, once finding the third element was met, apply it back to the introductory clause in the regulation. My final point, and yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, what this does is that it, I would say similar to Caldwell, would require stating the act and then having the framework where the act is weighed under that standard with that associated mens rea. So did you consciously disregard a known risk that your actions were cruel, abusive, humiliating, oppressive, demeaning, or harmful? And that's, I think, similar to, it's not the same, but similar to the framework this court approved in Caldwell for the, again, similar but not the same, offensive maltreatment. My final point is, and to the extent this is touching a dead horse, I apologize, but to the extent this court does find that the criminality turns on the language of rite of passage or excessive, well, that certainly wasn't in the instructions either. And it wasn't effectuated in any manner that would have indicated to the panel that any of those additional types of findings had to be met. Yeah, yes, Your Honor. And pending any questions, Sergeant Haverty respectfully requests this honorable court set aside and dismiss the specification of charge one.
Thank you. The court thanks counsel for both parties. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until further order of the court.
All rise. The court is adjourned until further order of the court.